From Tribune Tower, WGN Radio presents A Conversation.
I want to make one thing perfectly clear.
A dialogue.
What are you prepared to do?
An astute debate.
Everything within the law.
And a peek behind the curtain of politics.
And then what are you prepared to do?
I think Chicago is not only the center of the country, I think it's the center of the world.
Don't tread on them.
Where did this statement come from?
This is the Sunday Spin. Your host is the Chicago Tribune's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, not the enemy of the people. And welcome to this week's edition of the Sunday Spin for February 19th, 2017. Welcome to our weekly look behind the politics and policies that make Chicago, the state, and Washington run. Yes, it's time to grab that Sunday paper, go get that hot cup of coffee, and we'll try to get your day and week off to a great start. Well, Dave, I got to tell you, this weather's been fantastic. I mean,
we were spoiled.
Well, to say the least. Well, no, don't say that. That makes it sound like, you know, yeah, we know it's supposed to get colder, but
it's only February.
I know, but this has been like June.
Oh, you know what? Yesterday did feel like June, and I was walking around. There were buds on the trees.
That's scary.
There were buds on trees and plants that I saw. Not only the people just getting out and loving it, but the dogs, the people out with their dogs yesterday and Friday. Oh, the dogs were just eating it up.
Of course, yes.
Going crazy.
Getting that airing.
Mm-hmm.
Probably doing a little shedding as well.
Yeah, probably, yes. Yes.
Well, and you know, it was
fantastic.
It was so weird this morning. I was talking to Martha Jo Black off the air. She's our first guest this morning. But about just, you know, what coat do you wear? It was 30s this morning, and it's supposed to get to around 60, although a little bit cooler near the lake.
Correct.
But, what coat do you put on? You can't put the winter coat on because you're not going to need it in another 3 hours or so.
Mine is at the cleaners, actually. I looked at the forecast, no, really, and I thought, you know, now would be a great time to take my heavy winter coat in for its midwinter cleaning, and that's exactly what I did. For once, my timing was good.
You know, you're much more organized than I am.
Oh, right? I wouldn't say that.
Hey, you've seen my desk upstairs. Let's face it. Yes, you're much better. I should really think about doing that. Now that, well, of course, we're supposed to be back.
We're going to be back later in the week in the, you know, maybe not in the deep freeze necessarily. Let me call up the extended forecast.
Well, I did see that I believe on Friday evening there's a chance of rain switching over to snow.
Yeah, the latest one here says Friday Friday evening, yes.
Yes.
Rain and snow, perhaps, with a low around 29. But all through this week, not all that bad. 40s on Tuesday, Wednesday, a little warmer on Friday, near 50, and then it drops out again. Next weekend, Saturday, chance of rain and snow, and a high only in the 30s.
Yeah, so we'll be back to normal.
Exactly, exactly.
Which isn't too bad, I have to tell you, for this winter.
And not to be a Dave the Downer here. Not a Debbie Downer, but no. I'm going to say something. How about the fact that it's getting lighter?
I've noticed
earlier
that
in the morning,
too. Yes.
And later at night.
Yes.
So,
and I was thinking this morning, when is that time change? I don't know.
I think it's 2 weeks from this weekend.
So we know what that Sunday is going to be like.
We've been doing this long enough to know what that Sunday is like.
Yes, that's a bad Sunday. I think that was the only time I've shown up late for my own show was on Time Change Sunday.
I remember that. Jasmine called up here and she said, Dave.
But I was only 18 minutes late, which I thought was, you know, that's pretty darn good for really running late, because I think I ended up waking up like 10 minutes to 7.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So, I don't want to relive that. So,
well, this is why I set 3 alarms.
And see, here again, you're the organized one.
I've learned the hard way, Rick.
Well.
I've learned the hard way.
Yeah, and I slept through, I have 2 alarms, and I slept through both of them that Sunday.
I remember. Ugh. I remember. Well, part of that was just sheer exhaustion from the legislative session. Well, back and forth to Springfield and things running late. So, you know, there were legitimate reasons as to why.
Well, there's a sheer exhaustion factor going on now as we approach the 1 month of the presidency of Donald Trump, too.
Yes, indeed.
Well, I mean, you know, having to keep track of all of the bizarre tweets that go out and things like that.
And people leaving the administration already.
Yes, exactly.
We'll be interviewing four people for the National Security Advisor position.
Right, and David Petraeus is not one of them.
No, he is not in the running at this point. He was mentioned earlier, but he is not in the running.
And, of course, the second choice he had after the departure of Michael Flynn was turned that down as well.
Correct.
So
one of the people he is interviewing is the acting security advisor.
General right Kellogg, now.
Yes, I believe. Correct.
Yes. So, but now I was so happy to have the Blackhawks back in action
after a whole week.
Until they lost.
No
yeah,
way.
Right. But just, I mean, it's still nice to see them back on the ice. And yeah, they lost 3-1 to Edmonton last night. Basically, getting within a goal 2-1 towards the end of the game, but couldn't pull it off with after pulling Corey Crawford out of the net, and Edmonton ended up with an empty netter to make the final score 3-1. But they're back in action today against Buffalo, and you know, the thing is, they won 5 in a row, then they go off on a 5-day break, and then they come back and lose. I mean, just, you know, you see that momentum is so
slip
important in sports.
After, what, five full days, six full days of not playing?
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And sure, it's you got to heal up and everything. It's a tough sport, as we all know. But, yeah, just that momentum just really hurts because they were really making strides in the standings to catch up with Minnesota and kaboom. So hopefully we can get back on the winning side today. And then, of course, we've got spring training going on, speaking of the weather.
Yeah, I wish Sam were here today to talk about a little more about spring training, because that's always music to my ears.
Yes,
when
well,
I hear spring training.
And WGN-TV is running promos for next Saturday, 2 o'clock.
For a game.
2 o'clock spring training baseball.
Yeah.
I mean, how great is that? How great is that?
I have friends that have gone down this week. They're there this week for spring training.
Down in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And they're missing this beautiful weather.
Well, they'll be able to laugh at us sooner or later.
Oh, well, next weekend, probably.
Next weekend.
Yeah, they'll get their last laugh next week.
As I recall, Mike Hamernick talking with Dean last week, he said, you know, March could be a little bit interesting, so...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I missed that part of the conversation.
Yeah, he was when he was on with Dean in the 10 o'clock hour last week, he was saying that we could see some things in March. Winter is not over.
Oh, I know. But,
sorry.
But just look at it outside, though.
Oh, I know. I know. It's a beautiful sunrise, as I say, to see daylight earlier and earlier each and every morning and more of it in the evening. Oh, yeah.
Are you getting the grill fired up?
I'm getting it ready. I was a little under the weather on Friday, and I thought about firing up the grill and didn't. But
yeah, it's hard to make chicken soup on the grill. It keeps falling through the grates. You know,
yeah.
It's just a mess. Yes.
Right.
Well, I'm thinking of firing up some pork chops tonight.
Oh, listen to you.
Pork chops and Blackhawks. How about that for
won't be long. We'll have the blue cheese coleslaw.
Yes.
Blue cheese bacon coleslaw in
yes.
action.
Actually, now I think of it, that might be
a good side dish.
A good
for
side
you.
Dish for
with that for those chops.
Yeah, and
you bet.
Getting that's a great idea. Getting it. I mean, that's. I know you say winter's not over, but I got to tell you, maybe we can just kind of wish it away. No. Wishful thinking.
Sure, we could do that.
Or grill it away or something like that, right?
I have a friend that moved to Traverse City, Michigan this past year, and they've had a lot of snow up there.
Yes, there's been a lot of lake snow, plus just snow that has gone over us, you know?
Right, right. And I texted him saying, "Are you, you know, how you holding up out there?" He actually bought a tractor for his driveway. He has is not a snowblower. Wow. He's got a tractor. And I texted him a week or two ago, and I said, how you doing up there? And he sent me a picture back of a pathway that had been shoveled out from his back door to the grill.
Good for
he's
him.
He's a serious griller,
and he's
very good at it. And
wow.
So he said, as long as I can get to the grill, I'm okay.
I think maybe we need to make a road trip over there this summer.
That's a very good idea. That's
you know?
A great place to be.
Yeah, it's beautiful country.
Wonderful place to be.
I mean, my relatives up in up near Duluth were saying that they have not gotten much snow.
Now, that's surprising.
Right.
That's surprising. Cold, yes, but,
right,
but not a lot of snow.
No, it's not a good year for snowmobiling up in the Great White North.
I would imagine some of the skiing areas are hurting up there a little bit.
Yeah, except they, you know,
they make it.
Right.
Yeah.
So, well, let's just think about today. Let's enjoy the day. Let's enjoy the warmth of today as we get up around 60 degrees, as I said, colder near the lake. Dave's going to keep us up on all the news and sports. Sam is out. He's on the bench today. So we hope he gets feeling better. Producer Jasmine's here to field your phone calls at 312-981-7200. Our text line is the same number, 312-981-7200. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/thesundayspin, all one word. And we're on Twitter at @SundaySpin. Engineer Bob is still looking for his spring jacket so he doesn't get too overheated. As always, if you have to tune away, you can find our shows on WGNRadio.com. You can also get our podcast at iTunes just by searching for my name, Rick Pearson. Up ahead today, after Dave gives us the 7:30 news update, we'll be speaking to my good friend, Martha Jo Black. Martha is the author of Jo Black, More Than a Dodger, an homage to her father, who was a rookie phenom for the Brooklyn Dodgers after the color barrier was lifted. And as we commemorate Black History Month, her story is a great tale of the importance of fathers. Dave's back with a news update at 8, and then we'll speak to Mike Meany. Mike is the Executive Vice President of the Chicagoland Apartment Association. We'll talk about efforts in Springfield to enact legislation allowing rent control, as well as how the Springfield impasse could affect renters. Dave's got more news at 8:30, and then we'll speak to State Senator Michael Hastings, Democrat from Tinley Park. The Senator also will be joined by Steve Furkow. Steve is a volunteer for the Respiratory Health Association and a double lung transplant recipient. The Senator, Steve, and then there's a team named after Steve's donor, will be in the Hustle Up the Hancock, which is being held next Sunday. That's all coming up, but now we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN. Good Sunday morning. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, not the enemy of the people. It's time for our weekly spin through national politics, and I want to start out this morning by noting the death last week of Bob Michael, Robert H. Michael of Peoria. Bob Michael served for 19 terms in the United States House and was leader of the Republican minority in the House for 14 years. One of the most notable things that everybody said about Bob and reacting to his death, that Bob Michael's departure from Congress in the mid-1990s truly marked the end of an era, and indeed it was. Bob Michael was a consummate gentleman and a consummate negotiator. He was a person who understood what it meant to reach compromise and to be conciliatory. It was not a compromise as a surrendering of principles. Michael retired an election before Republicans assumed a majority in the House, and Newt Gingrich became the Republican Speaker. And with that, an ever more combative and polarized Washington truly began to take shape. Condolences to Bob Michael's family, and congratulations to his legacy. Well, the president has been back on Twitter, and on Friday afternoon at 3:48 p.m., he tweeted out, "The fake news media, failing New York Times, NBC News, ABC, CBS, CNN, is not my enemy. It is the enemy of the American people." I want to talk about that phrase just a little bit, the enemy of the people. And there's a piece in the Washington Post about this. Henrik Ibsen wrote a play called An Enemy of the People, And Adolf Hitler was allegedly an Ibsen fan. And he reportedly read that An Enemy of the People closely and wove some of the lines of it into his speeches. And his administration deployed this rhetoric to describe Hitler's main enemy, the Jews. Hitler's propaganda minister, Josef Goebbels, wrote, "Each Jew is a sworn enemy of the German people. If someone wears the Jewish star, he's an enemy of the people. Anyone who deals with him is the same as a Jew and must be treated accordingly. He earns the contempt of the entire people, for he is a craven coward who leaves them in lurch to stand by the enemy." Now, of course, the irony here, Trump's number two, Vice President Mike Pence, toured Dachau this morning. Initially, Dachau's internees were primarily German communists, social democrats, trade unionists, and other political opponents of the Nazi regime. And then came the rounding up of the Jews. The number of prisoners incarcerated in Dachau between 1933 and 1945 and its subcamps exceeded 188,000. The number of prisoners who died in the camp and the subcamps just between January 1940 and May of 1945 was at least 28,000. Ultimately, though, it's unlikely that the total number of victims who died in Dachau will ever be known. That's where Vice President Mike Pence toured today, the final resting place for people dubbed enemy of the people. Also, around the same time, the leaders of the Soviet Union were transforming the term enemy of the people into a major tool for oppression and silencing enemies. For foes of Joseph Stalin, being branded an enemy of the people was a death sentence. The Soviet leader deployed that language against politicians and artists he didn't like, and once branded, the accused were sent to labor camps or killed. In a best case, an enemy of the people would be denied education and employment. So when the term enemy of the people gets tossed out, there's a great deal of history that goes to that, and it's something, as a journalist, that I don't take lightly, and I think it's very, very troubling. And to further kind of go with this, John McCain is on Meet the Press later today, where he has said the use of those kinds of terms are kind of what launches things into tyranny and dictatorship. But let's go back even a week ago when Donald Trump advisor Stephen Miller made the rounds of the national Sunday shows. And other than the review of the president, the reviews for Miller weren't very good.
Do you feel like you and your staff there that you're in control of events at the White House?
I think to say that we're in control would be a substantial understatement.
We have equal branches of government in this country. The judiciary is not supreme.
There's no such thing as judicial supremacy. Mm-hmm. What the judges did, both at the ninth and at the district level, was to take power for themselves that belonged squarely in the hands of the President of the United States.
Stephen, the three judges say you're flat wrong.
No, the three judges made a broad, overreaching statement.
This is an ideological disagreement between those who believe we should have borders and should have controls, and those who believe there should be no borders and no controls.
This is a judicial usurpation of power. The end result of this, though, is that our opponents, the media, and the whole world will soon see, as we begin to take further actions, that the powers of the president to protect our country are very substantial and will not be questioned.
And will not be questioned. And will not be questioned. Okay? No, that's not okay. But I'd rather let MSNBC's Joe Scarborough on his Morning Joe show explain.
What did he say about the power?
Powers of the president are very substantial.
And they shall not be questioned. Read your friend.
They will not be questioned.
They will not be questioned. They are questioned, my young little
lad,
Miller. They will be questioned by the court. It's called judicial review. Alexander Hamilton and James Madison wrote about it in the Federalist Papers. It was enshrined in Madison's Constitution. Andrew Jackson, you go into your president's office, you know that one, and you look on the walls, and there are all these pictures of Andrew Jackson and books of Andrew. He talked about judicial independence. He talked about the importance of the judiciary. You really need to go back and read the Constitution.
Will not be questioned. Enemy of the people. You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, not the enemy of the people. I'm here in the Allstate Showcase Studio in Tribune Tower on Michigan Avenue on this bright and sunny Sunday morning. President yesterday holding a campaign event in Florida and told the traveling press pool on the plane when he was asked whether it's too early to be holding a campaign event. The president responded, quote, "Life is a campaign. Making our country great again is a campaign. For me, it's a campaign. To make America great again is absolutely a campaign. It's not easy, especially when we're also fighting the press," unquote. Well, the president did hold an hour and 17-minute long news conference last week, ostensibly called to announce a new pick for Labor Secretary after his original choice bowed out because he was going to lose a nomination fight in the Senate. But it turned out to be more of a festival of grievances aimed largely at the press. With Michael Flynn resigning as National Security Advisor, the questions turned to even more concern about Russian involvement in the Trump team. But, of course, Trump blamed the leakers about Flynn, as well as the media.
On the leaks, is it fake news or are these real leaks?
Well, the leaks are real. You're the one that wrote about them and reported them. I mean, the leaks are real. You know what they said. You saw it. And the leaks are absolutely real. The news is fake because so much of the news is fake. So one thing that I felt it was very important to do, and I hope we can correct it, because there's nobody I have more respect for, well, maybe a little bit, but than good reporters. It's very important to me, and especially in this position. It's very important. I don't mind bad stories. I can handle a bad story better than anybody, as long as it's true. And, you know, over a course of time, I'll make mistakes, and you'll write badly, and I'm okay with that. But I'm not okay when it is fake. I mean, I watch CNN. It's so much anger and hatred and just the hatred. I don't watch it anymore because it's very good. He's saying no. It's okay, Jim. It's okay, Jim. You'll have your chance. But I watch others, too. You're not the only one, so don't feel badly. But I think it should be straight. I think it should be. I think it would be, frankly, more interesting. I know how good everybody's ratings are right now, but I think that'd actually be, better. People, I mean, you have a lower approval rate than Congress. I think that's right.
Actually, that's wrong. I think we do have a new bumper sticker for this week. The leaks were real, but the news was fake. Certain incongruity there. But there was more in this news conference, as he basically said that the issue of Russia and his involvement or his campaign's involvement was merely a ruse fueled by Hillary Clinton supporters.
Can you say whether you are aware that anyone who advised your campaign had contacts with Russia during the course of the election?
Well, I told you, General Flynn obviously was dealing, so that's one person, but he was dealing as he should have been.
During the election?
No, nobody that I know of. Nobody.
So you're not aware of any contacts during the course of the election?
How many times do I have to answer this question?
Can you just say
Russia is a ruse. Yeah, I know you have to get up and ask a question, so important. Russia is a ruse. I have nothing to do with Russia. Haven't made a phone call to Russia in years. Don't speak to people from Russia. Not that I wouldn't. I just have nobody to speak to. I spoke to Putin twice. He called me on the election. I told you this. And he called me on the inauguration a few days ago. We had a very good talk, especially the second one. Lasted for a pretty long period of time. I'm sure you probably get it because it was classified, so I'm sure everybody in this room perhaps has it. But we had a very, very good talk. I have nothing to do with Russia. To the best of my knowledge, no person that I deal with does.
And that's the president of the United States. And note the parsing there, too, of not that I know of. Well, we're going to switch gears here. I want to welcome into the Showcase studio my guest, Martha Jo Black. Martha's a good friend of the program.
Hello.
And, well, it's baseball season. we got that going, right?
Valid point, valid point.
African History Month, and we're rolling into baseball season. Martha Jo Black works with the Fan Experience Department at the Chicago White Sox. And she's also the daughter of Jo Black and wrote a great homage to her father, Jo Black, More Than a Dodger. Martha, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
No, thank you again for having me.
As I've said in the past, and truly, with baseball season right around the corner, spring training going on, it's a great book if you're a baseball fan, but it's also a lot more than baseball. I mean, it's about life experiences at a very mm-hmm. difficult time for your father's life in sports.
Correct.
And also, also life experiences at a difficult time in this country.
No, that's correct. I mean, it was during segregation. As you've mentioned, and a lot of people should know, that Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier in 1947. So, and my dad came up in 52, which is only 5 years after the fact. But, you know, it's pretty hard. Seems like we may be going back in time these days. But that my father was told by a high school scout that... my dad was like, well, why aren't you looking at me? They're like, oh, you're a great player. And he was like, all right, thanks. And he goes, well, the scout's like, well, you're colored. My dad's like, right, and my last name is Black, so I know that already. And this guy was like, well, color guys don't play. And my dad's, are you kidding me? And my dad had baseball cards, but he loved the game so much that he never looked at it as, oh, my God, they all are Caucasian. There is nobody Hispanic. There's nobody Black. And he never realized that until that scout brought that out.
And he didn't grow up in an atmosphere of
segregation. No, he grew up in Plainfield, New Jersey. And if you lived in Plainfield at the time, you were white, Italian, Jewish. You all were poor. So you all played together. You all picked up the rocks and played. You ran around. You all did whatever with each other because no one cared about your race. It was like you're all friends. All your parents were pretty much poor. Your mom may have worked for somebody else's mom, or your dad may have fixed the neighbor's car on the street, not in the shop because it would have been cheaper. You know, but that's what real friendship and real community was all about back then.
And so your dad came up to the bigs in 52.
Correct.
And I said rookie, but he's 28 years old.
Yeah, he was an old rookie, kind of like I am. But yeah, no, my dad played in the Negro Leagues. He played in the Cuban Winter League. Yes, and that is with Fidel Castro. Yes, may his soul rest in peace, that he played as well. But he was a better basketball player, you know, at the time.
But that, I mean, and as I've said so often, what's great about your book is just it's an educational experience, too. That, and yeah, 1952 were 60-plus years.
Right.
But that's relatively still a fresh, recent time in the history of America.
No, I agree. And I think that, unfortunately, there's a lot of things that are resurfacing that even happened then. My personal opinion only is that my father, like a lot of people, white, Black, or whomever, they fought for women to have rights. They fought for minorities to have rights. They fought for men that didn't necessarily have an education, but you have the option to get a job. Those people did so much for this country, and it seems like it's being erased at this present moment, which is kind of saddening to me. My dad would be, if I was lucky enough to have him, he would be 93 years old now. And I'm not that old, Rick. Just put that on record.
I understand that.
You know, but it is something that I think my father would be saddened by everything, especially that's going on in Chicago. I mean, there's so many negative things going on that, and the community's scared, and they should not be scared to go out. And because, like you mentioned, it's going to be great weather pretty much all week, except for, I think, Friday, as you mentioned.
Right, later in the week. So
if somebody lives anywhere in Chicago, that includes the South Side or West Side, you should be able to take a walk in the park with your child. You should not be scared to do that. And I think that was one of the things that, you know, my dad, regardless of playing baseball, but he was like, this is what we do, because he did so many things in the Black community and for women and men to be out there for one another. So I think we're kind of missing some stuff.
We're going to talk more about that in just a moment. Martha Jo Black is my guest this morning. I'm Rick Pearson, not the enemy of the people. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio and joined by my good friend Martha Jo Black, author of Joe Black, More Than a Dodger, which is available
on Amazon.com. I'm not sure if it's still in bookstores, but I definitely know you can purchase it on Amazon.com.
And you can get it for your Kindle?
Yes, you can buy it for your Kindle, and you can also go to Chicago Review Press's website.
We've got a call from Ron. Ron, welcome to the Sunday Spin.
Rick, I think I told you even more than politics. I can listen to talk baseball all day, but I want to make three quick comments. First of all, to your guests, I want to commend and thank the White Sox for the RBI program, the investment in baseball in the inner city. I want to do that first. But secondly, just to point out, you talked about African American history, but Rick, in baseball, it was just really so interwoven into our culture. And I became a baseball fan. My dad took my first game in 67. Later on, I coached my son. But you also talked about the whole father thing, whether it's father and son, and as your guest, father and daughter. But that was really a big part of a tradition. But lastly, I would like to mention Curt Flood. A lot of people know about Henry Aaron, and you guess missing the importance of Jackie Robinson. But a lot of people forget about Curt Flood. 1969, challenged the reserve clause, which was restrictive as far as free agency. He was unsuccessful in the Supreme Court, but later on, that led the whole labor movement in sports. So all these big contracts right now, people did a gratitude to Curt Flood because he made that chance. So I just wanted to point that out during this month of history. And then again, as far as a baseball fan, I had to point it out. So I always, when you enjoy your guest when she comes on, I have the book. And just keep up the good work. And thank you for letting me get in here, Rick.
Sure. Thank you, Ron. Thanks for joining. And yeah, Curt Flood, I mean, really. Not just baseball, but really
for sports
in general that opened it up, because it was just, you know, you'd basically be blacklisted. You wouldn't have any place to play if you didn't want to sign the contract.
Correct.
Well, obviously your dad and becoming a phenom at 28 as a pitcher, 15-4 record. I don't know how many saves that he recorded. Starting pitcher in the World Series, first African American to win a World Series game. Won honors from the National League for Rookie of the Year.
Correct.
But as I said, this book is more than baseball. I mean, your father went on, and he was college educated.
Correct, which was a rarity.
Yes.
When my dad got out of baseball, he went to teach school in Plainfield, New Jersey at Hubbard, where he went, where the scout told him that coloreds don't play. And my father definitely wanted to buy him a ticket to that game one in 52 to come to the World Series. But, you know, my dad taught school, and so he took his students to Yankee Stadium. So, you know, if you were my dad's student back then, you would have met Mickey Mantle, Moose Scowron. They'd have been like, hey, Joe. And so all his kids got to get autographs from all these amazing players. And at that point, these Greyhound execs were there because we're going back to the Freedom Riders. We're on a Greyhound bus that got burned. I'm going down south. And the execs were like, oh, he looks familiar. He goes, aren't you Don Black? And my dad started to laugh. He goes, well, he played in the 30s, and he was Caucasian. And he was like, no, I mean, you're Joe Black. And he's like, yes, I am Joe Black. And they started to talk, and they were like, so what are you doing here? He's like, I'm here with my students. So regardless of what your race was back then, very few people had college educations. And they were like, students. And my dad's like, yeah. They're like, And you're a teacher. He's like, yeah, I'm a teacher. And they're like, okay, here's my card. Call me. So my dad thought that they were full of it, like a lot of people did, because when he got out of baseball, they were like, oh, call me. When you get out of baseball, I'll give you a job. Well, none of those people in corporate America had jobs at that point. And so my dad called, and they're like, we'd like you to come down to New York. It was Greyhound Lines at the time, to come down, and we'd like to show you around. And I was like, oh, okay. And so they offered my dad a job, but he did not leave the school. He took a leave of absence because he's like, I don't know if this is going to be real or not. And my father worked his way up, started different programs for Greyhound when I was born, which was in 69 when Curt Flood did a lot of things, that he was upgraded to senior vice president of Greyhound Corporation that moved to Arizona from Chicago, actually in 71.
And became the first African-American to be
a VP of a transportation corporation. Yeah, and all these things I did not know until my father passed away, because my father did not talk to me about anything. He was like, just study and do your homework and be kind to people. I was like, okay, that's what we can do.
So what prompted you to do the research on your father?
Well, I was fortunate that I work for my dad's friend, Mr. Reinsdorf, and he's like, well, I think it's a great thing that you want to do a book about your father, which I also think that was part of Jerry helping me heal over my father's death. And he's like, well, let's get you a co-writer. So I was fortunate enough that the White Sox organization got put me into contact with somebody who that writer was too busy. So they said, well, you should talk to Chuck Schaffner. And so Chuck and I started working together. So Chuck did a lot of research. I have way too many things that come out that I would like. Jerry's like, where did you get this? I was like, I don't know. My dad gave it to me. So I have all this paperwork, all these photos and all this information. And Chuck and I just talked every day and emailed every day and put everything together. And he did a lot of research, and I had him contact some of my father's friends that really knew things that were not just written in books, because, you know, everything that's written is not truthful. That is not for anything that's going on in this country now. But there's certain names that are in certain books that are not 100% right. So a lot of my father's friends helped a lot with this book, from Jerry, Peter O'Malley, Dusty Baker. They all got involved to help to put this thing together with us.
We've got a call from Mike. Mike, welcome to the Sunday Spin.
Yes. Hi, how are you?
Good morning.
Yes, I just wanted to say I'm white. I was born in England. I saw my first Cubs game in 1950, or not in 1950, I'm sorry, when I was about 10. And I just, when I got to a ballpark, I couldn't believe that, you know, I saw black ball players there, and I saw white ball, and I never gave it a thought in my head that they didn't, that black players didn't belong there. And I think that's the most, one of the most disgusting things that America has ever done to a human being, my opinion.
Correct.
I've been to the baseball, the Black Baseball Hall of Fame. I've been to the Hall of Fame. And the Black Baseball Hall of Fame has so much history there that I don't know if people realize it, but they actually invented the night baseball. They used to bring in these big poles or whatever it was, you know, with the lights on them and bring them into the fields. And it just bothers me that the, and I don't want to make it political, but like the government, we fought a civil war. A president was assassinated because of slavery, and then people are not being able to play a game that they love so much. And I think it's unfathomable. I'm sorry that happened to your dad.
Thank you.
And, but I'm so glad for people like that gentleman before me spoke about Curt Flood, and he was a good ball player because I saw him play for the Cardinals. And I just, I don't know, I just feel so bad for what happened. And I love baseball. It's my favorite sport.
Mike, thank you very much. And I'd encourage you to get a copy of the book, too.
It's a lot of history in there. And I will tell you, for everything that my father went through, though, he was never angry. My father passed away when he was 78, and he talks to everybody. He would sign autographs for whomever. He would have a conversation. He would help anybody at any time, because that is what he did get from his mother. My grandmother had a third grade education. She was a maid. And I will tell you this one thing, and I will not cry because I did not wear waterproof mascara. But when my grandmother passed away, it was before I was born, my father said he leaned over to her casket and kissed her, and he felt her spirit come into him. And he felt at that point that he had to do more, which helped him do more things in the civil rights movement. I think that spirit of my grandmother that came into him helped him be the man that he was, that fought to have full custody of me when I was at age 5. Being a 50-year-old man that had some notoriety, working your way up a corporate exec, and you really want a 5-year-old daughter? That you have to talk to your nieces and be like, now what the heck do I do with her hair? How do I do this? And he had that in him. So my father would help anybody at any time, and I'm very grateful that he did that.
And, you know, as part of his work with Greyhound, and mm-hmm. it was to kind of basically to assure everybody that Greyhound was welcome
right,
to everybody.
Everybody, right. Everybody, please come on the bus. It's not racist. We don't believe in this. And that was it. They were like, if we have somebody who's African-American, that people are like, I've seen him before, they'll be more open to say, well, okay, well, they have him, they must hire, just like this beautiful radio station. So my dad's office, which he told me that in New York at Greyhound Lines, his office was right here in front of the glass. So anybody walking by can be like, they have somebody African-American there, or at the time black or colored maybe at that point. And that from there, my dad just started programs, and the VP came down, or the president, excuse me, and he was like, why is his office here? We're moving him up. And so my dad got moved up to the corporate level at that point, because he's like, you're not going to do that to him. He's way too smart for that.
Well, and along with being smart, too, was the fact that he would also, he wrote columns.
Yes, called By the Way in Ebony, Ebony and Jet magazine.
Mm-hmm. That, but he got some criticism for some of those.
He got a lot of criticism, including when I went to college, I was told this, that my dad's basic thing was, don't just expect someone to give you something, you have to work for it. Yes, and it is still true, including for women. You have to sometimes be 10 times better than somebody else to get a fair shot at something. And people at that time were not, they didn't want to hear that. They're like, well, they owe us. You know, well, not, you're not necessarily getting 40 acres and a mule because you're owed it. Sometimes you have to work to get it. And my dad would put that in writing, and some people weren't very happy. A lot of people were. Then black radio stations would play my dad's By the Way commentaries. He would talk about fathers. He would talk about mothers. He's like, you know, being a father is being the man that's there raising your child, not making a baby. And so he would just put all that in writing and talk about it, because that was what he felt was true. And that's how we as a people were going to come together to be noticed in this country. It, you know, he's like, go for your dream, but definitely get an education. I think that's what a lot of athletes, and that includes whatever nationality they are, they seem to forget.
I was going to say, because there's still so much that's true of your dad's teaching and columns.
Yeah.
And that it seems to kind of, maybe we need to go back and look at some of this history.
Well, yeah, and I'm a big believer. I mean, I know a lot of people don't believe this, but I think for people to move forward, sometimes you have to know your history so you know what not to do again and how to go around certain things and what they stumbled on. I think knowing your history helps you move forward more in this country.
That's Martha Jo Black. She's the author of The Homage to Her Father, Jo Black, More Than a Dodger. Martha, as always, so great to see you. Great to have you in the studio. Go Sox.
Thank you so much. Yes, I know you're a Cub fans, but that, hey, how about let's go baseball?
Let's go baseball. That's
right.
Perfect. That's
right.
Perfect.
All right, thank you.
No north side, no south side.
Let's just win.
Yes, that's great. We'll be back with more right after this.
This is the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN. Once again, here's Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune.
Good Sunday morning. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, not the enemy of the people. Or as Abraham Lincoln said, which is inscribed in our lobby here, let the people know the facts and the country will be safe. Been quite a week for President Trump. He says the administration's running like a well-oiled machine. Of course, there was the decision to let Michael Flynn go as National Security Advisor over not being truthful with Vice President Pence over speaking about Russian sanctions with the Russian ambassador. That was bad news for Trump. Even though Trump knew about issues raised by the Justice Department about Flynn days before Pence did. And before he was let go, well, you know, Flynn was a loyalist for Trump long ago. Here is what he had to say at the Republican National Convention last summer in Cleveland.
We do not need a reckless president who believes she is above the law. Lock her up. That's right. Yeah, that's right. Lock her up. I'm going to tell you what. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
That's the former National Security Advisor for the Trump administration, Michael Flynn, at the convention in Cleveland, showing the continued disarray in the new Trump administration. Top Trump advisor Kellyanne Conway had explained that Flynn had the president's full faith and confidence only hours before Flynn was effectively forced to resign. On the Today Show, Matt Lauer asked Conway to explain things.
You said that Michael Flynn enjoyed the full confidence of the president. Sean Spicer later said the president was evaluating the situation, and then Michael Flynn resigns overnight. Were you out of the loop on this?
No, not at all. Both were true. The president is very loyal. He's a very loyal person. And by night's end, Mike Flynn had decided it was best to resign. He knew he'd become a lightning rod, and he made that decision.
So had he not resigned, the president would continue with him as national security advisor, even though he misled the vice president and the administration about the contents of that call?
That fact is what became unsustainable, actually. I think misleading the vice president really was the key here. And I spoke with the president this morning. He asked me to speak on his behalf and to reiterate that Mike Flynn had resigned. He decided that the situation had become unsustainable for him.
But wait
here.
A second.
And of course, the president accepted that resignation.
You're saying that was the straw that broke the camel's back, but the White House knew about that last month when the Justice Department warned the White House that Mr. Flynn or General Flynn had not been completely honest in characterizing that conversation with the Russian ambassador. And they even went further to say that as a result of that dishonesty, he was at risk for blackmailing by the Russians.
Well, that's one characterization. But the fact is that General Flynn continued in that position and was in the presidential daily briefings, was part of the leader calls as recently as yesterday, was there for the prime minister's visit from Canada yesterday. And as time wore on, obviously the situation had become unsustainable.
Kelly,
okay, diagram that out for me. Michael Flynn decided he had become a lightning rod, so he resigned. But yet the situation had become unsustainable, and the President of the United States said that he asked for and requested the resignation, even though the resignation came several weeks after the administration and the president was told about concerns about his conversations with the Russian ambassador. The situation had become unsustainable. Well, we're going to switch gears here. Joining me now is Michael Meany. Mike is the Executive Vice President of the Chicagoland Apartment Association. Mike is here with me in the Allstate Showcase studio. Good morning.
Good morning, Rick. It's great to be here.
I want to ask you, there's been some kind of percolation of legislation in Springfield. No man is safe when the Illinois legislature is in session.
Indeed.
But legislation that would end a ban on rent controls. And I believe Will Guzzardi is the sponsor of that legislation. And I guess, you know, we know it exists in other places. Why doesn't it exist here? And why, on behalf of the association, should it not exist?
Well, it doesn't exist here because since 1997, we have had state legislation that bans rent control at the local level. Bill was passed almost 20 years ago.
I believe Governor Edgar was assigned that.
Correct. And would prohibits local units of government from enacting rent control. From our perspective, that is very good public policy. And over the years, we have not had to deal with local units of government trying to enact rent control. Because of that, my colleagues in other states, are continually battling this. So, we think this is good public policy. Representative Guzzardi's bill, while we understand, his attempts to try to address increasing rents in certain neighborhoods, we feel that this is just not the way to do it. And so we will be we're very much opposed to it, and we'll continue to try to make the case that this is really bad public policy.
Well, why is it bad public policy?
It's bad public policy because it really will have the opposite effect of what they're trying to do. It will discourage investment in rental property, not only discourage it, but really put a halt to it because investors are, when they have their controls or limits on how they conduct their business, having to pay for unforeseen consequences, having rent control simply ties your hands too much. It discourages not only investment in people purchasing properties to make more rental housing available. It also discourages maintenance and upkeep properties. So if you do not have the income that you need to maintain properties, they fall into disrepair. Ultimately, the owners end up walking away from the property, and there are fewer housing options for everybody across the board. So it really ends up reducing the amount of affordable rental housing in the marketplace.
And, of course, that's kind of what we're seeing as kind of a boom here in Chicago is in the rental housing market.
Exactly, right. Much of the focus has been on the construction and you know, what's happening where we're sitting here downtown.
In the South Loop.
Exactly, right. The so-called luxury apartment buildings, there's been a lot of investment. But you have to, that doesn't only provide additional housing options here in the Central Business District. The trickle effect is that as you put more housing on the market, then other options become available. You have people that move up into housing, and then that frees up units at the lower end of the market. So, you know, the housing boom is, it's a good thing. You know, we've been blessed with, as you suggested, a lot of development of rental housing for a lot of different reasons. There are, you know, people are choosing to be renters these days as opposed to, you know, when I got out of college, you rented, but then the first thing you did when you were younger, saving for the down payment, exactly. And we're not seeing that as much today. And there's a lot of reasons for that. You know, the mortgage crisis from a few years ago resulted in, credit is a little bit more difficult to get. People are, they're a little jaded by what happened during that whole time period. So, the millennials, that are being attracted to the city here because of all the jobs that are being created, they want to live in an urban environment, and so it's created a lot of opportunities
and flexibility
exactly. We're seeing that younger people want to have, they don't necessarily want to be tied to a mortgage, where if they have a job opportunity to move out to the suburbs or even to another state, they want to be able to do that in a timely fashion and not be saddled with having to sell their home.
Well, especially with millennials too, because they know that's the generation that they're going to have a dozen, 15, 20 jobs in their lifetime.
Exactly, right. It's not like our parents when, my father worked for the same company for his entire career and retired with a pension. That's just not the way it happens anymore.
We're speaking with Mike Meany. He's the Executive Vice President of the Chicagoland Apartment Association. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin on this bright and sunny Sunday morning in downtown Chicago. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune. Not the enemy of the people. Joined by Mike Meany, the Executive Vice President of the Chicagoland Apartment Association. We're talking about some issues that are going on in Springfield. Another thing that we've talked about a lot on this show is the so-called grand bargain, the negotiations that have been going on between the majority Senate Democrats led by President John Cullerton and Senate Republicans led by their leader, Republican leader Christine Rodonio, trying to figure out if there's a way to break through the lengthy budget impasse. And one of the things that's been discussed is basically a service tax and expanding the state sales tax to services. I guess they call it an excise tax for legal reasons. But that's one thing that's under discussion. And I guess there are ramifications here that it's curious whether they're well thought out, by the powers that be that are trying to put this together.
Right. Yeah. We in our initial analysis of the so-called grand bargain, in particular, Senate Bill 9 is the revenue piece of the grand bargain. And when we first looked at it, we recognized that revenue has to be a piece of the puzzle here. And my organization, like many other business organizations, supports finally solving this budget crisis so that we can get our fiscal house in order and that we can become a more attractive state for investors and people that invest from around the country in apartment buildings and other enterprises. However, the what we noticed and we wanted to draw attention to the legislature are these excise taxes, as you mentioned, because as we looked at them, every one of them will affect apartment owners, property owners in some fashion or another. And of course, the 5% excise tax that's being discussed, those costs are, you know, they'll be absorbed to the extent that they can, but ultimately they will end up being paid by renters. And so we want to make sure that the General Assembly understands our concern about the impact of these. For example, there is a storage excise tax, and we think that that will affect typically in an apartment building, there are storage rooms that tenants
the storage
rent.
Locker.
Exactly. Type. So the 5% tax we think would apply to that. They've also talked about parking as storage of cars, which could be defined as parking, and indeed we think that that is the case. So aside from the city and county tax that you have on parking, now again, in apartment buildings, it's only for the public parking that those taxes apply to, but in this case, this could apply to all parking that is provided to tenants. So that could be a big expense. There's an amusement excise tax, which again talks about things like health clubs, access to athletic equipment, and pools and things like that, which of course apartment owners do provide in certain instances to tenants. So how would the tax apply in that situation? Then repair and maintenance. This obviously is something that apartment owners do on a regular basis, whether they do it with their own employees or they contract that work out. And then landscaping and laundry and dry cleaning services. So as you can see, the list is it caught our attention. And again, we're still trying to figure out in exactly which situations these taxes would apply. But in the end, you know, it could end up being a pretty big impact on apartment owners.
Has the association taken any position on this legislation?
We have had discussions with the Democratic Senate staff that has been working on this. We have made our concerns known to them. We've asked questions, detailed questions about, you know, specifically in which situations would these taxes apply, and we're still kind of working through that. I think, you know, as you know, there's been the discussion in Springfield has been more kind of at the macro level. When they get into hearings on each of these particular bills, that's when we think we'll have the opportunity to ask the pointed questions about exactly to which situations these taxes would apply.
Yeah, I mean, we call it a grand bargain, but it's still an evolving kind of thing here. And, of course, this is that package of a dozen, 13 bills, whatever. Each one is conditional on the passage of the other, and there's
Correct.
No guarantee that there are votes to pass any of it. And there's a serious question now that the governor, having weighed in during his budget address last week and kind of giving some guidance for what he'll accept, and the question becomes, and it's a story that we have in the Sunday's Tribune about if the Senate can't pass it right now, then you throw in some of the wants that the governor has. That would seem to make it even more doubtful for passage.
Yep, I certainly agree. I think it's, what are we going on, 20 months now that we have not had a budget. And, you know, you'd like to think, you give the Senate leaders credit for trying to get this process started. And but as you suggested, there certainly are a lot of hurdles ahead.
A lot of hurdles. Before I let you go, I wanted to ask you about some of the stuff in Washington going on, too. I mean, we have Peter Roskam from Wheaton. We had him on the show last week, and of course, he's the tax policy chairman on House Ways and Means. A lot of discussion about tax reform. We have the president saying, oh, there'll be something out soon. I think that's being said without really talking to the people in Congress, because talk about a kind of moving, evolving target there. But I know that the association has some concerns about some of the discussions that are going on.
We do. Tax reform, as you suggested, we've heard, you know, it's likely to happen at some point. Congressman Roskam is going to play a big role in that. So we are traveling to Washington, D.C. in March, early March. We have got our lobby day, so you'll have apartment professionals there. And two issues in particular with regard to tax reform that we're concerned about. You know, they're talking about really, you know, stripping down the tax code to the basics. We just want to make sure that whatever they do, that investment in rental housing is not put at a disadvantage over any other type of investment, real estate or otherwise. And two issues in particular are the 1031 like-kind exchanges. There's talk to do away with that as a as an incentive for people to invest in rental properties. So the way that works is the capital gains that you would pay when you sell a property, or you'd have to pay when you sell a property, you could defer those capital gains if you were to purchase a like-kind property. And what we have seen is that this encourages transactions in the marketplace, it encourages investment in rental property, and it makes more housing opportunities available for everyone. So we're hoping that we can maintain that. The second one is the low-income housing tax credit. That has been has done more to create affordable housing throughout the country than probably any policy out there. And, you know, we want to make sure that Congress recognizes the value of that. Our members take advantage of that investment opportunity. And if that goes away, the affordable housing situation that many, you know, are trying to address, we think will be even, you know, more severe.
I mean, I know there's a lot of talk about streamlining the tax code, make it simple, simplification and all of that. And yeah, is it loaded with carve outs? But, you know, in a number of those carve outs, it is part of the economy.
Right.
And part of encouraging investment.
Right. I mean, if they were to do away with the capital gains tax, then, you know, maybe the like-kind exchange wouldn't be necessary. But I don't see that happening.
I don't either. Mike Meany is the Executive Vice President of the Chicagoland Apartment Association. Mike, thanks so much for getting up with me this morning.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, not the enemy of the people. On the floor of the U.S. Senate this past week, Illinois' senior Senator Dick Durbin said he's finally had enough of President Donald Trump tweeting about Chicago crime. And instead, Durbin says Trump should help bring federal programs to Chicago.
President Trump sends out a lot of tweets. He likes to tweet about Chicago. And I'm not quite sure why. Tweeting doesn't save lives. Saying that you're going to send in the feds, well, that may be one of those short tweets that's catchy, but it doesn't mean a damn thing to the people who are being shot and dying in the city of Chicago. Last week, I joined my colleague, Senator Tammy Duckworth, and we sent a letter to the president asking him to do more than tweet when it comes to Chicago.
That's U.S. Senator Dick Durbin, the state's senior senator. Well, joining me now here in the Allstate Showcase studio is State Senator Mike Hastings from Tinley Park, Democrat from Tinley Park. We're joined also by Steve Furkow. He's a volunteer for the Respiratory Health Association, a double lung transplant recipient. And next Sunday will be the Hustle Up the Hancock for the Respiratory Health Association. Before we go there, though, I wanted to speak with the senator about last week's budget message by Governor Rauner. And we now have seen kind of the budget books. We see that even with what he proposed, there's a deficit or hole of between $4.5 billion and $7.2 billion, not an insubstantial sum of money. And the $4.5 billion being what's described as results of discussions of the grand bargain.
I shake my head, Rick, because
I didn't know that could be a line item. That's like that waste, fraud, and abuse line item that everybody says we have to get rid of.
We had the director of GOMB, which is pretty much the chief financial officer for
the budget office.
And I will just tell you that when you asked him certain questions, and I was firing like a laser that day because I was so upset by what the governor filed. Number one, it's not balanced. Number two, he makes false assumptions that I think are just catastrophic to our state. if certain bills don't pass as part of this grand budget, which he's had zero participation in, it's up to about $7.2 billion unbalanced. And he's got to answer to this, and he won't. He's so stuck on message, it's like a robot. And you talk to any of his minions, oh, my Lord. It's the same thing over and over again.
Well, he did finally weigh in on what he would like to see as part of this bargain. And, of course, there's been plenty of questions about, you know, what if the Republican senators vote for something and it turns out that he doesn't like it? There's also the trepidation, too, among all of you in the Senate about what if you guys pass this and it goes to the House? What does Speaker Madigan say about it?
If I was a Republican legislator, I'd be gravely concerned about what the governor will do. He's hung him out to dry before the education vote last time around. Some Republican senators didn't vote for it, and they ended up signing it, hanging them out to dry. But there are certain things about this package that I think the governor has zero clue about. I think he's depending on the Senate to deal with this problem. And quite honestly, the Senate's the adult in the room. And it's nice for him to finally join the party. It's about 2 years too late. You know, welcome to the budget, Governor Rauner.
Well, Christine Rodonia was on Steve Cochran's show last week, and she said that when the Senate returns on February 28th, that they should vote on this. Do you think there's going to be a vote on it? And where would you bet the chances are of passing this package?
Do I think there's going to be a vote? I'd be optimistic about a vote. Whether it passes or not, I'm not so sure. There are certain bills that are not as, some of the legislators won't be.
Some are more flame resistant.
Some of them are very easy to vote for, quite honestly. Some of them are very difficult for both sides of the aisle to vote for. One of these bills alone would be a major win in the legislative cycle, just if it's normal times. These aren't normal times, so it's got to come to vote. Let's see where people stand, you know, and put all the bills on the board so that you know where people stand on everything. I think that's probably the most important thing they could do is put them all on the board.
But we already saw, for example, the effort to change the pension system, right, in a small aspect, and even that did not get support.
We put three easy ones on the board, Rick, and it was pretty difficult for people to vote for some of those. They didn't feel it was time. So the 28th, if it pans out and all of them pass, then it's on to the House. If it doesn't pass, it's back to the drawing board, and the governor's going to have to account for an additional $3 billion that he anticipates on saving. And I don't think he's able to do that, Rick. And when I asked the GOMB, I said, what do you plan on doing to make your revenues match the expenditures? They were unable to answer. And that's a problem.
Well, a significant problem because, we've been without a budget, a full year budget, for the past 2 years. We have no budget now. That expired in January. And we continue to see the social service safety net crumble. When you look at the governor's budget book, in some of the estimated cuts that he would make, those go to a number of social service providers.
Right. But looking at the higher ed, just looking at higher education, our university system, we talked about this before, he's going to cut that another 10%. And then so for human services, from maintenance, the maintenance budget of what he should be passing is about $200 million short on that as well. So our social service agencies that are crumbling, they're going to crumble even more if this guy doesn't come up with a better plan to move things forward. It's our job to authorize the spending. It's his job to actually spend the money. And last 2 years, it's just been atrocious. The state's problems have been exasperated under this governor. Don't get me wrong, I'll acknowledge the fact that over the last 30 years of both Republican and Democratic governors, you know, this has kind of set up this problem to what it is today. But when he came in office to shake up Springfield, I was hoping he was going to shake it up for it to be better, but it's a lot worse now. There's another looming problem too, Rick, that I don't think we've talked about. Pensions, the pension cost has, from 2008, was 6% of our budget. 6%. Today, it's 25% of our budget. That needs to be addressed first and foremost. And I think through this package and maybe some refinancing of how we go about paying for some of these costs needs to happen soon.
But are you confident that something can be done this year, given the enormous scope of the problem, the enormous tax increase that's going to be needed, as well as enormous cuts, with the prospect of 2018 looming right around the corner?
every day we wait is $11 million. $11 million. And by Election Day 2018, if the governor fails to act, it's going to be the back bills will be at over $20 billion. Now is not the time to politicize. And the people of Illinois can't afford it anymore. And it's time for him to act. That's why you were elected to lead. And for me, if you're elected to be the governor, you lead the people, not put poison pills into the General Assembly.
I still don't feel the optimism. Sorry. It's just the nature of the game in Springfield is that people in the legislature don't like to make hard votes, and they're going to have to make a bunch of them here.
Well, I didn't get sent down there to sit on my hands. I know that. I'm sorry you don't feel optimistic, Rick. You know, that's why you're the enemy of the people.
How did I know that was going to come up? Oh, thank you so much, Senator. I've been told off this morning.
Just so I'm not the enemy of the people, I just wanted to say hi to my wife and Mikey that are listening at home. I love you guys.
Thanks a lot, Senator Hastings. Well, as I said, joining us here in the studio along with the senator is Steve Furkow, who's a volunteer for Respiratory Health Association, a double lung transplant recipient in 2000, also a kidney recipient as well. Steve, thanks so much for joining me.
I'm quite honored.
Well, we have this Hustle Up the Hancock. This is the 20th anniversary of this, and each of you are taking part in this. Why don't you tell me, Steve, you're doing your 15th climb.
I am.
Which is just amazing. But you're also representing Team Carrie.
My team is Carrie's Climber. Carrie was a beautiful young girl from Iowa who, in the month before she passed away, she told her family how strongly she felt about organ donation. I was in Chicago, and I was dying from living 39 years with cystic fibrosis. I now breathe with Carrie's lungs, and I've breathed with her amazing lungs for 17 years. My wife and I met her family. Her family connected me with dozens of her friends and volleyball teammates. And for the past 12 years, they've come out every year to climb with me, to join my team and climb with me. And they drive hundreds of miles. It's a little reunion for them. They're all like daughters to me. After 12 years with Carrie's lungs, the drugs I take to keep them gradually destroyed my kidneys. One of her beautiful friends, Alex, her hand was up in a heartbeat, and she told me she had my back, and she gave me a kidney in May of 2012. So I'm slowly being rebuilt into a girl from Iowa.
And Algona, Iowa is a beautiful place, by the way.
I've been there a number of times, and I agree. I mean, for me, anything about Iowa is a beautiful thing. But I started doing the hustle, and it's my way of being able to give back. I'm 56 years old. I'm in CF years, I'm like 140. I was not supposed to live this long, and my life was not supposed to be this amazing. People doing the hustle, people supporting RHAMC, Senator Hastings and what he's doing, this is the reason I'm alive, and it's a beautiful and amazing thing. I believe Senator Hastings was influenced by a beautiful young man named Ian, whose father passed away from lung cancer. And Ian has done amazing things for the Respiratory Health Association. And the fact that Senator Hastings jumped on and decided to haul his fanny up 94 floors it's a tribute to him. And I think that's a very neat thing.
And Carrie's Climbers has raised over $300,000.
Yes. And I never did this. I've always done this to honor Carrie. I hate fundraising. And I never did this to raise funds, but they just happened. And I'm so proud that me and my team have raised that amount of money to help people in my shoes. It's I'm very proud of all of them.
We're speaking with Steve Furco. He's volunteer for Respiratory Health Association. We're talking about the hustle up the Hancock. We've also got State Senator Michael Hastings from Tinley Park in studio. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Good Sunday morning. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, not the enemy of the people, here in the Allstate Showcase studio, joined by State Senator Mike Hastings, Tinley Park, and Steve Furco, a volunteer for the Respiratory Health Association. Next Sunday is the Hustle Up the Hancock, the 20th anniversary of the Hustle Up the Hancock. And each of these gentlemen here are going to be taking part in that. I know who I'd be betting on to make it to the top first. But there's a 94 floors, 4,000 participants in this. How can people sign up to help support and help sponsor people in the for the Respiratory Health Association?
So Ian Pye, who lives in my district, he has a website that I'll be posting on my Facebook page. So if you want to go ahead and donate, his link will be on there, and you can do it electronically. Again, fourth grader, supporting his dad who died from lung cancer, and I can tell you he's just a warrior, a young warrior, and he's doing great things.
And Steve, I'm sure the same. If they go to Respiratory Health Association website, they can hook up with various sponsors of, yes, of the various teams. And, of course, Carrie's Climbers is the team that Steve is representing. And you can go to www.lungchicago.org/hustle would be the website where you can find out more information about that. Senator, I want to go back to talk a little bit about some of the politics in Springfield. And, you know, kind of a timely, and I thought this was kind of interesting, is that you're sponsoring legislation to have a bigger investigation of what happened over at the State Board of Elections when there was evidence of foreign hacking attempts into the voter database over there.
You know, it gets scary. I mean, after the election, people just sort of forgot about this, but over 70,000 names were hacked into at the State Board of Election. I think people should be having a public outcry over this. You know, your name's been compromised, your data's been compromised. That's a big deal, especially when it comes to elections. You can influence a lot of things if you have that information.
Well, and I mean, you've looked into some of this already. I mean, the board said that no data was changed.
No data was changed, but data was mined. And when you start collecting data, you can use analytic firms to do certain things to start influencing those voters. There was never a cross-reference to, like, nationality. Was it surnames? So a lot of this stuff has to be looked into. And I think people want to be reassured that the system is secure. And that's probably the big thing for me, is making sure that elections cannot be biased or influenced by outside foreign countries or internally within our own state.
Well, and Illinois, I think, was hacked. Arizona, I think, was hacked. And, of course, you know, as we've become more technologically advanced and, you know, you can register to vote over the Internet, that was shut down after this breach was discovered. That was shut down for a while. The board said certain things about how you registered to vote might affect how much data may have been fished.
Don't get me wrong. There's a minor technicality that was left open, that if you're a savvy computer hacker, they hacked into it. And you know, that's what people do. That's what foreign countries do to try to influence our elections. But for me, it's about the people. You should know if we've been hacked into. We should know if what the results of that are. And for that, in our election system, which is sacred, we should be protecting our people and this process so that somebody doesn't get in there, doesn't deserve to be in there.
You've also called on Congress. This is a non-binding resolution that's done by the legislature, but it's asking Congress to look at the extent of the Russian influence in the presidential campaign as well.
Senator Dick Durbin's doing a great job. He's advocating on behalf of all the people in the country. And for me to do it in Illinois, I'm hoping that this takes place nationally to where people feel that this is a sacred process. And it should never, ever be altered or influenced by a foreign country. That's what our democracy is. That's why I went overseas to fight, so we can have free and fair elections. And I can tell you, I'm going to push here for the next couple months to make sure that that does happen.
Well, are you satisfied that it does seem that there are bipartisan calls to kind of just look into whatever Russian influence may exist even within the presidential campaign and the president's administration?
Oh, yes. When it comes to our country and our national security and also our state, nothing should be not looked into to make sure that it's a safe process. I looked at all the IP addresses that actually were tapping into our State Board of Elections. Some of them were back to the Netherlands. You know, if you looked at our secondary and tertiary sources where those IP addresses come from, there's some foreign countries there that we're not friends with that are looking into it.
I also wanted to know, as a veteran, your thoughts on kind of what transpired with General Flynn and as National Security Advisor, and that the issue of having those contacts with the Russian ambassador to the U.S. over U.S. sanctions, and how this has all, you know, the whole issue of intelligence and security in this country.
I'll just say that the communications between him and the Russians are inappropriate, and I'll just say that people don't resign for having no reason. There's more to the story, and I think more to the story will come out. And someone is a national security advisor, if you're going to be advising the President of the United States, we should have somebody that's above reproach. And I can just tell you, in this situation, I don't think he was.
Are you comfortable with what's going on in Washington, with given how we seem to be having this battle between the intelligence agencies and the administration?
As somebody who was one of the first cadet interns from West Point for the National Security Agency and watching what's going on, this is deathly scary. You know, guys like Vinnie Viola, who was up for the Secretary of the Army, backed out. You know, the guy, General Hayward, who's going ahead and he was going to backfill General Flynn, doesn't want to do it. If this isn't striking enough of what's going on, I don't know what else to tell you. It's very frightening.
We live in interesting times.
But that's why we need young people to step forward and lead. And right now, we have a lack of young people, and that's why I'm calling on all young people. Hey, step forward, get involved. School board, local municipality, state, federal, get involved and do something.
That's State Senator Mike Hastings, D. Tinley Park. And we've also been joined by Steve Furkow, a volunteer for the Respiratory Health Association. Next Sunday is the Hustle Up the Hancock for the Respiratory Health Association. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Well, that's all we have time for on this week's edition of the Sunday Spin. I want to thank my guests, Martha Jo Black, Mike Meany, State Senator Mike Hastings, and Steve Furkow. Most of all, I want to thank all of you for listening. And it's time for me to continue my work as not an enemy of the people.
I would disagree with that. I think all right-minded Americans know where you journalist people are.
Journalist people. Journalist people. I like that. It needs a qualifier.
Am I also an enemy of the people as a movie critic?
Well,
I'm not sure.
I guess
I'm kind of a reporter, too.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. You take part in journalistic enterprises.
I'm semi-enemy.
Oh, just a partial enemy. Okay, fine.
I'm an enemy to just some of the people, and I think we know what you
want. Oh, I know those people, yes.
I think we know what you want. Great show today. Really interesting.
Thank you.